Welcome back to Armed Nevada Radio. This is another week and another installment, and we are glad to have you with us. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing well. Doing good today.
And we also have Hunter in the studio today. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. And Hunter, where are you from? Why are you in here today?
So I work with LAG Tactical. We're a local Kydex company. Sell to a couple of distributors as well as a bunch of local stores. So
rad. So we are going to talk about Kydex, which is one of my favorite holster materials.
And mine as well.
It's fantastic. So we're going to talk a little bit about what makes LAG special and why they are a local business that we want to highlight and celebrate. So what else is going on this week, Gary?
Oh, my God. At home? Personally? Or
just in general? What is going on?
My youngest one, Sophie, my two-year-old, broke her clavicle.
Oh, man.
Broke her collarbone. She's milking the snot out of that too, by the way. But I don't know if you ever try to keep a two-year-old in a sling.
Oh, I can only imagine. No, I haven't.
It's a challenge, trust me. It broke my heart, though. I mean, all joking aside, it did. It broke my heart. She's too young to have a broken bone. 2 years old. Come on.
That's
I guess
terrible.
She was climbing up in her. I was in the garage doing something. Her older brother was watching her, allegedly. And He stepped aside to go ask me a question. And in that moment of time, she climbed up in her high chair and apparently took a header or a shoulder pointer, rather, onto the hardwood floor and ended up cracking her left clavicle. I'm like, oh, my God, really?
So she's bossing you around?
Oh, she's milking it. You got a carrier everywhere. She's talking like a baby. I'm like, yeah, she's really playing it for points.
So last night I wanted to ask you a question, and maybe this is a greater question for our audience. Mm-hmm. So one of my go-to carry pieces is a Walther PPQ.
Right.
Absolutely love it. I've had it for about 4 years now. It's one of my favorite firearms in my safe, and I know it's not the most concealable handgun in the whole world, but I absolutely love this thing. And I found a used one at a local retailer, and the price was right, so I bought it. So, and my wife was trying to wrap herself around the logic of buying two of the exact same gun.
As am I.
Well, no, but here I think, okay, so Walther isn't as common as Glock, right?
Right.
And, you know, if something were to happen, specifically, you know, we've highlighted a couple of times that I had a run-in with a certain Nevada Highway Patrol trooper that caused me fear that she could take my firearm, whether there was cause or not. You know, if I was to lose that firearm somehow, it's not something I can go down.
And by lose that firearm somehow, you mean have it seized as evidence.
Right. I want to be able to go back to carrying the thing that I trust, the thing that I like. And or the other thing is, if we're going to put on our tinfoil hats and we're going to be preppers for a second, what happens if society as we know it breaks down? I have two now. I have one for parts if I have to. And, you know, what's the old adage? Well, one is none and two is one?
One is none, two is one. Right. I mean, all good points. I might add, you have nine guns in two hands. I mean, some good points.
There's some logic here to buying two of the same one, right?
There's no such thing as having too many guns.
Right.
So we'd all agree on that, right?
I think...
And if the price was right and it's the same gun and you're comfortable with it, why the hell not?
Well, the price was right. And plus I got a huge rebate because I used my card that went to this retailer. So they gave you a $50 coupon. So it got even cheaper.
So you win all the way around.
I did.
Now, the bigger issue, you sent me a text this morning...
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
About your AR conundrum.
Right.
Now, you have an AR Smith M&P.
15.
15. Yeah. AR-15,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That you've invested some dollars in it. You got some Magpul furniture on it.
Right.
And you've spent some money on optics twice.
Yep. Right.
But you've invested some money in it. Now, you're investing in a Daniel Defense rifle.
I am.
Which clearly is the Rolls Royce of ARs out there.
I mean,
it's a damn fine weapon system.
Right.
And now you're asking me, what was it? Should you cancel the layaway on the Daniel Defense and just dump $500 into your Smith?
Well, because I have a $500 deposit on the Daniel Defense right now. So.
And my reply was, you could get one hell of an upgrade for $500 on the Smith.
True.
Then again, you don't have to upgrade the Daniel Defense.
Except for adding maybe
optics or a light.
Right.
All right, which... Well, even then it's going to run you way more. Optics alone are $500.
Right.
Light, you're talking maybe a couple hundred.
You know, we could probably dedicate a whole segment on optics.
Well, my point was I'm not being of any help, am I?
No, you're not.
That's
no.
what I'm here for.
You could also spend that $500 on ammo. Go out and shoot your rifle.
Holsters?
Who invited holsters? Hunter? Why do you have to be the voice of reason?
More holsters? You could buy more Kydex. A lot of Kydex for $500.
I could. Well, yeah, let's get... So, Hunter, we've got you here in studio. Let's include you in the conversation a little bit. So, tell us a little bit about LAG Tactical. How'd you guys get started?
Well, we actually started out of Evan, who you guys have met before at the shop, out of his house.
Okay.
So, a couple years ago, he was in the market for some gear for a couple of his guns and searching around. The industry leaders at the time, quote unquote, their lead times were, 8, 10, 9, 12 weeks or sometimes even more.
And back in the day, that was like Raven Concealment, those companies, right?
Yeah, people like them. There's a couple other big names out there that it's just simple fact. You get a lot of exposure and you get real busy, and they didn't organize themselves to keep the lead times down low, so they just started creeping up and up and up. So he figured at the time that it could be done better.
Okay.
So that's one of the founding principles for us, was making sure that we kept the custom orders to 2 weeks or less.
And I would say that a huge selling point for LAG is, if you look around, even in town, there's a couple of other Kydex makers. Some of the lead times for those guys is up to 8 weeks or longer.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, one of the most frustrating things is to buy a new gun. You're super excited about it. You want to go out and use it at the range. And then I got to wait 2 months for a holster. Whereas with you guys, you got that 14-day turnaround time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gary and I both, we've placed orders with you guys, and you've had our holsters done even before the 14 days.
Yeah, oftentimes we can beat that. It just depends on what the lead times look like for that week. So, and then too, we also offer some special services to guys here in town if they need it sooner. So
for those that maybe, let's say, I know there's a lot of guys in the community that are leather diehards, or maybe there's new people listening that have not had any experience with or significant experience with holsters. Tell us why is Kydex the go-to? Why should that be something that new shooters or those that have used leather for all these years consider?
It's how we all switch from revolvers to semi-automatics. We switch from bolt guns to, auto-loading rifles. Mm-hmm. It's just a progression in technology. They've actually been making Kydex holsters since the 70s.
Oh, really?
The Rogers holster company, Bill Rogers, did it. He also was a lot to do with Safariland. He was the first guy that we're aware of who's making holsters out of Kydex. So it's not as young as people think, but we've seen an explosion in the last 5 years in popularity for Kydex stuff.
Why do you think that explosion has taken place the last few years?
It's general trends in the shooting community too. I mean, certain political events certainly helped out the gun industry. You saw a lot of panic buying, saw a lot of people who may not have been interested get interested.
Yeah.
And then too, I mean, this is kind of like the golden age of firearms ownership here now, where there's so many options, so many different manufacturers coming out with cool new things. And it's one of those things where Kydex just kind of exploded too. It experienced that growth. You have a bunch of different people making quality gear. So
I think for me, YouTube is probably one of the biggest enemies of those of us that love gear. I remember watching Travis Haley talk about one of his holsters, and for me that was like, oh, I need a Kydex holster just like Travis Haley. So
yeah,
that's what exposed me to it.
The Magpul videos that came out about 7-8 years ago, that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, people see their favorite instructors and they want to kind of emulate what they're running. And people like Travis Haley, who are kind of on the forward edge of developing new, TTPs, new equipment, all that fun stuff. They're always looking to get, an advantage, over what they're currently using.
Yeah.
Whether that's through training or through gear. And so it's guys like that. And then, who really drive the innovations.
So what are some of the advantages of running a Kydex rig as opposed to any other material?
There's a couple advantages. Number one is Kydex. It has that click. Everyone hears that Kydex click.
Yep.
So that it's not a you can add retention systems to them. Safariland, their holsters are made of Kydex. Most of them, anyways, they add their SLS and ALS stuff. Mm-hmm. You can add active retention to them, but they have that passive retention where, if it's made properly, you bend over to pick something up, you take a fall or whatnot, it's not going to come flying out.
Yeah.
It's not unsecured like a leather holster.
All right, I'm gonna interrupt you real quick. We have come down to the end of our first segment, if you can believe that. Time flies when you're having fun.
It does.
So we're going to take a quick break for commercial, and we appreciate you guys listening. And this is Armed Nevada Radio with Gary and Ben on 107.3 KNews. Welcome back to Armed Nevada Radio with Gary and Ben on 107.3 KNews. And we are back with Hunter from LAG Tactical. So, Hunter, you were talking about some of the advantages of Kydex, that it kind of clicks in, has good retention. Any other advantages?
Yeah, so Kydex is formed with heat, so
yeah.
Thermoform. So what that means is you can do it for just about anything out there, really. I mean, for instance, if we have customers who come in, they need something made for their custom one-off gun or whatever it is,
yeah.
Whether it's a race gun for competition or just a weird one no one else supports, we have the ability to take that gun and, due to the nature of Kydex, make a holster that fits it extremely well. You don't have to kind of shoehorn it into another size leather holster or something like that.
See, that's what I like, because I run a TLR-1 on one of my guns, and you guys were able to mold something exactly was what I needed. And I know, Gary, you just had one made that had a couple of one-off.
Hunter brought it in just today. It's for my new Glock 19 with having some custom work done on it. So they were able to make me, Hunter made me a holster to fit the new Trigicon RMR sight that's going on there that Russ Bacon from Nevada Cerakote's working on for me. So I've got the holster and no gun, so I got nothing to put in it right now. But I'm looking at the holster, and man, it looks it's sweet. It looks dead on. I can't wait to get it out there and start running it.
Well, and I like a couple of LAG's designs, because you've got one, it's the one that I have, where you can rock it outside the waistband or inside the waistband.
Yeah, most of our holsters that we offer, all the flagship models, they'll come standard with both inside and outside the waistband belt loops included with the holster.
I think that's pretty cool.
That is all. I had no idea. I saw an extra set of belt loops in the bag here, and I'm like, what the heck? What are these for? And then explaining it was for inside the waistband. I'm like, right on. I'm glad.
So one of the things we talked about was the Kydex industry is blowing up right now, and a lot of that is probably YouTube, I would imagine. You can find all kinds of how-to videos, and the actual techniques of making a Kydex holster, they don't seem all that difficult when you watch the videos, but people say the same thing about photography, and I know it takes, it's way more than pushing a button. How would you say LAG has separated itself from all the competitors that are out there? I mean, because you guys are, I think you're really successful. I see you in just about every store here in Reno.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to a couple of national forums, and I see your guys' name mentioned all the time. I mean, how have you kind of pulled away from the pack a little bit?
Well, it's what we like to tell people all the time is it's not hard to make a functional, as in one that will hold your gun,
yeah,
holster in your kitchen. And if you already have, if you're the tinkerer type and that appeals to you, I mean, you could probably make something that will work. The difference between like a garage-built helicopter that crashes out instead and one that the Army uses,
yeah,
is, night and day. So
I wasn't aware that was a problem.
Yeah. You didn't hear about that?
No.
That was a couple months ago.
The home-built helicopter.
But,
I'm going to stop building my helicopter.
The principles are the same. There are just tiny little nuances and attention to detail that goes into our stuff that kicks it, up above them,
yeah,
the rest.
Well, I a couple of the things I've noticed is, one, that reversibility from inside to outside the waistband, I think, is unique to you guys. The other thing I really like is the flared opening on your guys' holsters. Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty cool.
Yeah.
So
we do a mold layering with our stuff that leaves less of the holster relieved on the backside, the side that is against your body.
Yeah.
And what that does is, number one, it helps keep it from getting it too many high points that'll rub into you, dig into you,
yep,
especially if you have a really bony hip, and then it helps the holster sit closer to the body as well. It doesn't stand off too far off the hip,
right?
So we do that. We do the flared opening, like you were mentioning. We do that on all of our holsters and our mag carriers as well, and it really helps with reholstering under stress. Say you're carrying inside the waistband, you don't have to worry about your pants dipping into yep, the holster, preventing you from reholstering your gun. And then, like you said, the inside, the outside, the waistband. Now, the belt loops themselves, they have adjustment built into them, so you can fine-tune the ride height and the cant on, yep, the holster, too, by moving them around on the holster.
Yeah.
So there's stuff like that, and, it's just the little design details and, like I said, the little attention to detail with the polishing and how it's assembled and all that, that is what really sets us apart.
From the just Joe Blow in his garage? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another endorsement for you guys' product, one of the guns that I have a holster from you guys for is my HK VP9 with a TLR1. So, you know, it's not a small rig. It's, you know, it's the equivalent of a Glock 17 mm-hmm. with a light on it. And I was able to wear it comfortably the last couple of days inside the waistband. And I think that's a testament to the thought and the workman or craftsmanship that goes into your guys' holster, that I can conceal a large full-size or full-frame gun like that comfortably.
Yeah, we hear that all the time, and we've also heard all the time, you know, Matt, I never thought I'd be able to carry this gun, or I thought I'd just have to deal with it, or it wouldn't be comfortable, whatever it is. So it's one of those things where they're reasonably priced as far as custom holsters go. There's definitely more expensive, and there's definitely cheaper, but it is a bit of an investment for quality gear.
Yeah.
But what we found is once people make that investment, they usually never look back.
Yeah, well, I'd agree so far. Money well spent on all my Kydex gear, whether it's from you guys or a couple of the guys in town, has held up really well. And I'm looking forward to using the one you guys just made me in classes and see how it holds up. But I don't foresee any issues. It's very well made.
Yeah, and we also have a really good warranty on our stuff, lifetime warranty.
Okay.
If you're ever unhappy with it, if something goes wrong with it, just get in touch with us and we'll figure it out.
And see, that's huge, I think, too. The fact that you guys are willing to stand behind your products, and if something does happen with it, you'll work with people to get that corrected or replaced.
Yeah, and what we found, too, is just being honest with people up front. And we strive in every day for mastery of our craft. So we do everything that we can do to make sure they get a good product. But sometimes either something misses QC, either they're not happy with it because their body type or whatever it is. It doesn't happen very often, but every now and then it does. And in those instances, we'll definitely, you know, either take it back, replace it, exchange it, fix it if we can.
Yeah.
You know, we'll work with you to get you gear that works for you.
And see, that's huge. I mean, and that's one of the reasons I love Walther products, is they have an almost unquestionable lifetime warranty no matter who owns the firearm. So if something happens, they'll stand behind it.
Right.
Gary, I know you and I, that's the reason we've chosen the optics on our rifle, is because of the warranty that is available.
Well, the warranty, the quality, the affordability, those were all big factors when I chose the optics for mine.
I mean, and that's the same case here with LAG. I think not only is I think their prices are very reasonable. Not only that, but I can go to any number of firearm shops here in town, and they've got your holsters right off the rack.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and on top of that, too, we're supporting a local business.
Absolutely.
Which is big, you know, and that's I believe wholeheartedly in doing that. You know, support the guys at home that are doing the job.
Well, not only that, I know you and Evan are huge Second Amendment supporters. So, mm-hmm. you know, I want my money going locally to help Nevada businesses, because obviously, Gary, you and I are small business owners here in town.
Very small.
You know, and I want people to support us, and so I try to do the same thing here in town. Is when there's an opportunity, I would much rather buy from you guys than say a better known national brand or somebody else over the web.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate all the support. We've had a really, really good support base built up here in Reno, and you know, the people out here are great. They love shooting. They love, you know, supporting local businesses. We see that a lot. So, yeah, we definitely appreciate it.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, too, is normally we see Kydex in just a couple of basic colors. I know mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of black, obviously, a lot of the coyote brown, and then maybe a few of the girlier colors. But the young lady working the counter there at your guys' office, she had something pretty custom done. So you guys do custom work as well?
We can, yeah. So we offer four-color standard, no extra charge, so the black, OD green, dark gray, and then coyote brown.
Yeah.
You can mix and match those, and you don't get an upcharge for those. We do have access to a bunch of different colors and patterns. Like she had the black cryptic, call it Typhoon, with a red back to it.
It looked pretty sharp.
So we definitely have access to those, and there is a small upcharge because we typically don't stock them. So it's just usually we charge whatever cost is for that stuff to get it here, and then the normal cost of the holster.
So if I want a black carbon fiber with a red backing for my Walther, you guys can take care of me?
Yep, absolutely. We just sent out some blue carbon fiber to a shooter on the Armalite three-gun team because the Armalite blue kind of matches pretty well.
So. That is cool.
All right. Well, we're coming to the conclusion of our second segment. And, man, time flies when we're talking fun
things. Can you stick around, Hunter? Stick around for the rest of the show? We're gonna turn it up here in a second.
Nothing but time.
I think Gary's going to get a little fired up, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
All right. Yep. Well, stay tuned for head explosions that are about to happen. So this is Armed Nevada Radio with Gary and Ben on 107.3 KNews.
Hey, welcome back, shooters, in Armed Nevada Radio. I want to kind of switch gears here a little bit. I took the opportunity yesterday, Ben, and I played investigator.
Do I need to go get you a stress ball before we start this segment? Are you sure?
No, we're fine. My cardiologist might disagree, but we're fine. So I got to play investigator yesterday.
All right.
And, you know, everybody's aware of what, sad events that occurred recently in Chattanooga with the four Marines and the one sailor that were killed by the radical Islamist with a lawn gun and one police officer that was wounded.
Yep.
And, thankfully, Heroes in Blue ended up taking that guy out and putting warheads on foreheads. So, you know, good for them. We all know what DOD has been saying about arming recruiters. We know what the public opinion is about it. Everybody knows what everybody else knows. But you know what? Nobody has taken an opportunity to ask the guys manning the recruiting offices.
Right.
So yesterday, and I called you up and I gave you fair warning. I said, this is what I'm going to do.
Yep.
Yesterday, I went to a Marine Corps recruiting office.
Okay.
Okay.
In an undisclosed
city at an undisclosed location in said undisclosed city. So okay. I go to the Marine Corps recruiting office.
Okay.
And I thought, why not get these guys' perspectives?
Okay.
All right. Let's see if I can get them to talk to me, open up a little bit, and see what they have to say. What do they think about it?
Okay.
What do they think about being armed up? Would they do it? How would they do it? And more importantly, what do they think about these folks that are posting up outside Marine Corps recruiting stations or Army or Air Force or Navy recruiting stations that are armed up either with open carry sidearms or they're all kitted up with plate carriers and ARs, as one Facebook responder put it, waiting to get their Patriot card punched.
All right. Well, so just as a recap to those that are listening that may have been off social media this week, armed citizens have been going to recruiting stations.
Correct.
And they have been assuming the role of armed guard.
Correct.
To hopefully protect our recruiters from being victimized again.
Right. And, okay. And I have mixed feelings about it. I really do. But before we get into that, we'll save that for the next segment. I want to make sure I get in with what the Marines
say. Okay.
So I go to this recruiting office, and the first thing I noticed was the blinds were drawn.
Okay.
All the blinds were drawn. First time I've ever seen that. Secondly, the doors are locked.
So you weren't able to freely walk in?
I was not able to freely walk in. So okay. I didn't know the door was locked until I actually tried to pull the door open and walk in. I noticed the door was locked. I see a shadow through the blinds come to the door, and they open the door up. And I was greeted by somebody who I'm going to assume was a Marine. They were in civvies. And he motioned me in very quickly. Like, they didn't want to stand there with the door open.
Okay.
Which I don't blame him.
Right.
So they let me in the office, and there were probably roughly seven people inside this office. And I introduced myself, told them who I was, what I represented, told them about the business, told them about the radio show. And I said, listen, I just want to talk to you guys. Nobody's talking to you. What are your views on it? And we started talking about arming up. And one of the points that I don't think a lot of people understand is, you know, the Marine Corps is the only branch of the service that is not allowed, they're not authorized to wear their utilities in public.
And utility, you mean camo?
I mean, their MARPATs, their Marine, yep. Marine their Corps pattern camouflage. They can't wear their MARPATs or their utilities out in public.
Whereas other branches can.
Right. The Army, the Air Force, the Navy, those guys can all wear their camis or utilities out in public.
So whenever the Marines go out in public, they got to wear...
They're wearing their...
Blue pants.
Their Charlies.
Yeah.
All the change into civvies, too.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you just brought up something, Hunter, about changing the civvies. So what I noticed was, first of all, everybody in there was in civvies except for one guy.
Okay.
And I found that a bit odd. And I will tell you that what they've been told is that when they leave the office, if they're going on a break for lunch, they're to change out into their civilian uniforms or into their civilian clothes, rather, shorts, T-shirts, ball caps, whatever. And, you know, I find that, on one hand, that makes sense. I mean, it's an understandable policy. It does make sense. There, I know that the Marine Corps Command is thinking in the best interest of the Marines. But you know what? It sucks that it's come to that.
Yeah.
These guys have sacrificed so much to wear that uniform. And I've worn the uniform in my country, but I'll tell you what. I'm not worthy to wear that uniform. Yep. I never would have made it in the Marine Corps.
Right.
I don't have that what that takes to be a Marine.
Yep.
These guys have it and more.
Yep.
And to be told that they now have to take their uniform off when they're in public, that they can no longer represent the glory of the United States Marine Corps, something about that just rubs me the wrong way.
Well, it's an outrage because here you've got these young men and women that have gone through extreme sacrifices. They've gone through the crucible and all of these things in their basic training, and they have proven themselves to be amongst the most tough people in our armed forces. Mm-hmm. They have earned the right to wear the, you know, the globe and anchor and eagle, and their command is now telling them not to wear it in public. It's... I mean, that's offensive. And the other thing is it exposes, I think, a failure on the part of our president and our Department of Defense that instead of really being proactive and defending and acknowledging the fact that now our soldiers are at war on our home soil, that they're asking them to take off their uniform. It's going to make me really mad because we should be saying, you know what, the war has come to our soil or has come to our shores, and now we have to allow our men and women, whether they're recruiters or MPs or whoever it may be or whatever role they play, they have to have the ability to defend themselves. I'm sorry, but it makes no logical sense that the men and women that we trust with arms in foreign theaters can then come home and be slaughtered.
Arming them up. One person posed a question that it could potentially be a violation of posse comitatus.
I don't agree.
I don't either. I think technically maybe you could make an argument for that, but I don't believe it's a violation of posse comitatus.
When I strap a sidearm to my hip, I'm not a cop. I'm not functioning as a cop. I'm wearing that as a means of defending myself, my children, my wife, and any other defenseless person that may be out there. I'm not functioning as law enforcement, and neither would if... You know, the states where governors have allowed their guard to carry concealed firearms, they're not functioning as law enforcement. They're not violating, you know, posse comitatus.
I hear you. I do, but that's the argument
they're going
to make. They're
merely defending themselves and their brothers in arms.
I talked to them about, you know, what would it take for you guys to be armed inside the office? And they said, well, for us to carry concealed here in the office when we're in uniform, it's just not feasible. These guys are wearing their dress Charlies. If I'm getting the terminology right, if I'm not, please, somebody get on Facebook and correct me so I know what the hell I'm talking about. But, you know, they're wearing their khakis and their blue pants. They're sharp. The shirts are tucked in. You're not going to conceal a handgun in that uniform. Utilities in the office, that's one thing, but you can't go out in public in your utilities. You'd be able to conceal much easier wearing utilities.
Right.
So the suggestion was that they have a firearm in a lockbox accessible by a senior NCO.
Yeah, but the problem with that is it's the same thing that we as civilians run into. When you off-body carry, it's not going to be there when you need it.
It's not going to be there when you need it, and I brought that up to them. And so having a weapon far more accessible to at least a senior NCO where it's not in a lockbox, where you don't have to think about fine motor skills such as hitting the little combination keypad with fingers or fumbling with a key if you can find the key under stress or under fire, that's not feasible. But DOD's not going to sign off on it.
So do these Marines even want to carry concealed? Is that something that they...
They do. Okay. They do. And this is the offer that I made them. I told them at the conclusion of our talk. And it took a little while for these guys to open up to me, and I understand why. They don't know who I am. You know, I'm a bearded guy, and you know, I kind of dressed professionally when I went in there. I didn't go in there looking like a polished turd. But, you know, they were a little reluctant to talk, and I completely understand why. But they did open up, and I did kind of earn their trust, or at least I thought so by the end of our discussion. And what I offered them was this, and this offer stands for any active duty Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps recruiters in the state of Nevada, anywhere. Here in northern Nevada, anywhere. I'll come to you. You come to me. We'll make it happen. We'll figure it out. But what I've offered, and this is in conjunction with Battleborne Ammunition and Firearms in Carson City, you get your office together, find a date that works for your office, and recruiters, I will train you to get your concealed carry permit, and it's on me. I'm not taking money from veterans. Taking money from my fellow warfighters. I will train you for nothing, absolutely free. And Battleborne Ammunition, I got to hand Rudy a huge credit here. Battleborn stepped up after I posted that and said, not only that, but we will front you, we will comp you your 400 rounds of ammunition that you need for the course.
That's crazy.
They don't pay a thing.
That's crazy.
And
that's
so
a crazy deal.
I gave my business cards out to them. They couldn't believe it. These guys were beside themselves. And the one young gal that was in there, she's been in the Marine Corps 8 years, asked me, she said, well, how much is your course? I'm like, are you kidding me right now? I said, I'm not taking your money.
Yeah.
I said, there is no scenario that exists where I'm taking your money. We'll figure it out. You find a couple of dates. We'll make it work, and we will get you trained. At the very least, you will be able to carry concealed while you're here and protect yourselves.
Yeah.
So, and that offer stands. Army Guard, Air Guard here locally in the state of Nevada, active duty recruiters, reserve recruiters. We'll figure out a way to make it happen. So there's a second half to this story. We're going to go outside the recruiter's office now where I talk to a guy standing post out there with an open carry firearm. And, oh boy, do you want to hear about this? So stand by. We're going to be right back after the break. KNews 107.3, Armed Nevada Radio. All right. Welcome back. We were talking about Marine Corps recruiters, Army, Navy, Air Force recruiters, and the dangers that they now face. They're targets. I mean, you're right, Ben. You said earlier that, you know, wars come to our soil, and these guys are easy targets. They're sitting ducks. There's no two way about it. You know, they got to lock up those doors now. They got to draw those blinds, and they're targets.
Yeah.
And it sucks that it's come to that.
I can't even tell you how infuriating it is that we're asking our armed forces to basically sit back and hide and not be proactive about their own self-protection while they're, you know, here domestically in post, in garrison, at the recruiting station.
Well, let me tell you what part of it is. Here's the thing a lot of people don't understand. Part of it is it's the officer corps not trusting the senior and junior NCO corps and the lower enlisted corps with firearms. That's what it is. You get the officer corps that, and listen, I'm going to tell you, there's a certain elitism that comes along with being an officer. And if you're not an officer, you're just not trustworthy enough to carry a firearm on post.
The attitude is from the top down. You look at the White House, they refuse to call this what it is. It's a terrorist attack.
Right.
And we have a new brand of terror that has come to the shores of this country. And the only people that are going to be an effective deterrent or an effective intervention to it are armed citizens.
Exactly.
No longer can we rely unwittingly on the DHS to stop large-scale attacks, because they're not going to be that anymore. They're going to be one guy with a gun or a suicide vest, and there's going to be nothing the government is going to be able to do. It's going to be those of us that are willing to take up arms, that are willing to either be a deterrent or an intervention, and the same goes for our soldiers. And until this president stops calling terrorist attacks workplace violence or whatever the hell he wants to call it, and gets real with us and say, look, it's extremist Islamists that want to do us harm, that want to impact this country's lifestyle. Until we get real about that, nothing's going to change.
Well, you know, we talked about armed citizens stepping up, and what we're starting to see now is the rise of the legacy of the Minuteman that's coming back. And look, I'm going to be honest with you. We've all seen the news reports. We've all seen the photos and the YouTube videos, these guys that are taking it upon themselves to kit up, stand outside recruiting stations with either open carry sidearms or, in some cases, plate carriers, you know, 240 round combat load and an AR-15 or an AK.
Right.
Now, on one hand, I commend these guys. They are epitomizing the legacy of the Minuteman. So I do commend them on that.
But on the other hand, you know, yesterday we had an incident where some idiot who already has convictions
for AR.
Negligent discharge, who really, in my opinion, has no business being out in public with an AR-15, put a round into the asphalt. And you know what? As a community, we need to be proactive about denouncing these people and calling them out.
We need to police our own.
You messed up.
Well,
and you're going to give the anti-gunners more fuel, you know, to restrict open carry or whatever, you know, whatever else agenda they want to take up after this.
I spoke to – while I was speaking to the Marines inside the office they happened to point to a guy standing outside, and they said, well, there's one of them right now. He's back. He's been standing out here. So I said, oh, I'm going to talk to him next. So I went outside, and I spoke to this individual. I didn't get his name. Honestly, I didn't want to get his name. I don't care who you are. I spoke to this guy, older white male. When I say older, he's actually younger than I am.
Yeah.
The guy was 47. I'm 53. I'm like, holy cow, you've lived a hard life. Open carrying a 1911.
Okay.
And I get to talking to him, and he explained to me that he's never served in the military. He's never been in a confrontation of any kind. In fact, he admitted that when his father tried to implore him to join the service, that his words, not mine, he goes, I was too big of a wuss to join up. I'm like, okay, well, that's your choice. You know, we're not a, you know, we don't have the draft. You're not required to serve time in the military. It's certainly your choice. I'm not going to, you know, judge you for that. So his motivation for standing out there was to support and honor the sacrifice the Marines and the recruiters are making and to protect them because our government won't. Okay. Fair enough.
Right.
I get that. That's a commendable motivation. Then I started talking to him about a particular sidearm he was carrying. How many magazines you got, Karen? I'm not carrying any spare magazines. Like, what are you, what?
Oh, because I
one 8-round magazine.
Right.
I said, well, then he backpedaled. He started to, as I like to call it, pee backwards, and said, well, I do have a spare magazine in my back pocket. I'm like, well, second ago you told me you didn't have any, but okay, that maybe it's an oversight on your part.
Okay.
Then he had a second concealed weapon, which he wouldn't show me, that he had just stuffed in his waistband on his left side. Now, this
like
guy
stuffed
says...
Stuffed as in, like, no holster?
He said he is convinced, this guy was absolutely convinced that his open carrying would deter a radical Islamist from attacking the recruiter station.
No way.
That should a radical Islamist here in Reno, Nevada, walk up to that parking lot and see him, that would be a deterrent. And I said, let me tell you something. Let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Let's say that I'm a radical Islamist.
Yep.
I'm committed to my cause.
Right.
I don't care about dying. I have no fear of death because I know that I'm going to the 72 virgins with Allah.
Did you remind him that in Garland, those guys drove up, saw the SWAT team, and still advanced on that event?
No, we never got to that point. But he is absolutely convinced that 1911 on his side was going to deter an Islamist. Let me tell you something. If I'm an Islamist, I see the open carry handgun, you're the first person I'm taking out.
Yeah.
Because I'm spraying and praying, brother.
Right.
He said, well, I will give my life. I said, for what? I go, for what return? I go, you're not doing anything. You're not effective. I said, let me tell you something. I go, you want to honor these guys? You want to respect the job that they're doing? Then you know what? Conceal that and be vigilant. Be the unseen sheepdog. I said, because if you, and he refused to conceal the firearm. And so you know why? If you refuse to conceal the firearm, then the only thing you're out here for is the look at me factor. You're waiting to get your Patriot card punched. Yes, I commend you for coming out here and standing a post when few other people wouldn't. But you know what? For piss sake, do it right.
I don't know. I'm a little bit torn on this because I think these armed citizens going out and protecting recruiting stations is a function of freedom, which I commend. Because I think it's free people stepping in where the government won't do their part to protect the armed forces or allow
but
the armed forces
effective.
To protect themselves.
I asked him, how much training have you had? Oh, I haven't had any.
Well, see, there's...
How much training have you had in actual tactical defensive firearm use? Oh, I haven't had any.
Well, there's the rub, because I know, you know, if we have a few friends that are highly trained or you know, such as yourself or one of these other guys, if they were to go out there and be openly carrying and we knew they had the training, I'd have no problem with it. But if you are not willing to bring a sizable arsenal with you or a team to back you up, concealed and observe is probably the best approach.
At the very least, you know what? If you want to kit up, and listen, I have no objection at all to combat veterans, people that are highly trained, former LE guys, former law enforcement guys. You want to put a four-man fire team together and kit up and go sit in the parking lot in your vehicle and post up and protect these guys, more power to you, brothers or sisters. Go ahead. But if you are untrained and all you've got is a badass attitude, you're not going to be effective. Listen, leave it to the people that are trained. I commend you. I do. Don't get me wrong. I commend you for taking it up, taking up this standard and standing out there. But
see,
do it to be effective.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, let me tell you, the only reason this guy's standing out there is the wow factor. It's
right.
The look at me. I want my 15 minutes of YouTube fame. He's waiting to get his Patriot card punched.
I guess the issue is I have no problem with armed citizens being out there. The problem is that you and I time and time again have seen these photos of these guys wearing neon colors, rocking rifles without optics or sights. You know, there was one guy with his an AR pistol with no sights whatsoever on it.
He has AR SBR with a SIG brace on it, and the pistol grip on the front of it, he had the grip on the rail on the front.
Yeah.
Well, that turned that weapon into a felony because you can't put a grip on the front end of an SBR with a SIG brace and still call it a pistol.
Well, and then the guy running no optics, no sights whatsoever.
No sights, yeah.
You know, how effective is a rifle without iron sights or an optic? So,
it's not. The wow factor. That's all it is. It's a showpiece.
See, and that's where I start to, you know, our community needs to be better about saying, you know what, unless you've got the training, unless you have got the equipment, don't go out there and make a scene and possibly cause an accident that's just going to give these people...
Well, and I want to close it out on this point, too. If I'm the father of a 16 or 17-year-old kid getting ready to go into the delayed entrance program for the Marine Corps, do I want to walk by these guys who are mad-dogging everybody and their brother and bring my son in or my daughter in to enlist? It's like, look, if you're one, listen right now, if you're one of these people standing out there, quit mad dogging everybody. Seriously, not everybody's the enemy, boys. Leave the good folks alone. All right, on that note, we're going to close it out. We want to thank Hunter from LAG Tactical. Hunter, real quick, what's the phone number to get a hold of you?
It's area code 775-636-6532, and we got a shop over on Dickerson, so 2nd and Keystone.
Awesome.
Area.
Give them a call, guys. Ben, close it out. Take us out of here.
Hey, it's been another wild show, one that I've enjoyed doing with you guys, and look forward to next week. And stay safe, stay armed, and watch your six.
Absolutely. We're out of here.